Hey there, we're Caring Better and Braver, a podcast for family caregivers in Wisconsin and the La Crosse County area. I'm your host, Jenna Juvie. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it seems like conversations about mental health, stress, and burnout are happening in my personal life almost every single day. We're also hearing about it in the workplace, doing workplace training. I read articles about parental burnout, caregiver burnout, and compassion fatigue. People are talking about this quite a bit. A survey by the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance revealed that one of the most difficult things for family caregivers was finding ways to meet their own personal needs. And one of the most significant negative impacts of caregiving was feeling tired and worn out all the time, followed by a decrease in social life. I think that when we talk about stress, burnout, and compassion fatigue, caregivers are the ones who feel it the most because they're juggling the demands of taking care of another person while trying to manage themselves too. I'm also noticing that self-care is a really big buzzword lately, but it doesn't always feel authentic to me. So I wanted to debunk the concept of self-care, dig deeper, and ask, what does that really look like for me as an individual and a caregiver? How can caregivers move past the stress and burnout and maybe even avoid it in the future? To help us ponder these questions, I invited Heather Quackenboss to join us on today's episode. Heather is the Human Development and Relationships Educator at UW Extension.
Welcome, Heather.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. We really appreciate it.
Yes. And you know, I have to say, if you still have listeners on here after you used the term self-care, I applaud them because I hear self-care and I kind of go, ugh. And we think of it as this pampering, as these very feminine-like, costly things we need to do, like a massage or a manicure or drinking fancy wine or doing these things, and that's not it. Sometimes those things can help us feel better. Yeah, maybe a bubble bath will help us relax a little bit. It's not going to take away all of our responsibilities and make life easier for us. And I think to look at self-care as self-well-being and what works for us is what I tend to do and recommend and frankly just try to practice every day myself.
Okay, so right out of the gate, I know Heather and I are on the same page. To move away from the buzzword self-care is something I can get on board with and instead think of it as self-well-being.
Say it again.
Self-well-being.
Self-well-being.
Yeah, and honestly, what works for me works for me. I can tell you that doesn't work for my husband. And his doesn't work for me. You know, I look at friends who do different things, and you sometimes look at a person and you're like, you do what every day? And for them, maybe they're running or they're journaling or their bubble bath even works for them. And if that sounds terrible to you, that's not your self-care and that's okay.
Part of the reason Heather yucks at the term self-care is because we have this tendency to look at what other people are doing and wonder, well, why can't I do that? Why should I do that? Or how come I'm not doing that? We have social constructs, maybe even commercially influenced constructs, of what successful self-care looks like. And when we buy into those, we neglect to consider that our own version of well-being looks different from anybody else's. The key is finding what works for you as an individual.
Absolutely. And I think there's so much, we tend to judge each other, right? How are you doing? I mean, when you're a parent, parents are the worst judges of other parents. I used to let my kids climb up the slide as long as no one was coming down. I was talked to about that. I was had faces behind my back. I was the parent who let their kid climb up the slide. That's not what you do. We're the same way with any caregiving. Oh, you do what? And it's that judgment. And sometimes that's hard to ignore. Oh my gosh, you take your person out to lunch? I can't take my person out to lunch. What's wrong with me? And then we start shoulding on ourselves. I mean, we're going to talk about self-care as bullshit, and we're going to talk about shoulding on ourselves. I should do this. I should do that. And frankly, a lot of it is, what are my expectations? And are they realistic for me? And what are my boundaries? What can I really do? And therefore, what do I need to say no to?
Judging ourselves against others, shooting ourselves, and eventually learning how to set boundaries. We'll get back to all that later. I want to start at the basics about stress and what can we do with our stress. Heather tells us that, surprisingly, stress can be a good thing.
So stress is one of those things that we all have every day. And what we used to think of with stress is it's bad to have stress. And we try to get rid of stress. We try not to have any. And that's not going to happen. I'm sorry to be the one to tell us that we're never going to get rid of stress. What we have found, though, in research, and Kelly McGonigal is the person who's really good at this research and has found this, is it's not stress that is making us sick. It's our response to stress.
Interesting.
That is actually making us sick and even causing some premature death.
Wow.
So if I know I have a huge day and I'm taking the person I caregive to the doctor, and I'm also a parent, so my kids have different things after school, and I have stuff going on at work, and all of that piled on top, that's a lot of stress, and that's a big, heavy, overwhelming day. Absolutely. Am I going to stop any of those things from happening? No. My response to it, though, is what's going to make the difference.
Mm.
And it's going to be, okay, I have all of these things. Can I do them all? Is it even realistic? If I can do them all, how am I going to do it all without losing my mind?
Mm-hmm.
And then I know that it's going to be a big, heavy day. How do I manage to get through it, knowing I am going to feel probably overwhelmed, probably scared, probably angry, maybe a little irritable, all at the same time? And so working with that is going to help me get through the stress. So we're not going to get rid of stress. We can keep moving through it, and we can make it our friend even a little bit. So knowing, okay, now I have to call the doctor, and I'm nervous to call this doctor because maybe this doctor's not as friendly as I'm used to, and they're maybe a little bit, you know, not having such a good bedside manner. When I'm nervous, I can say, okay, my heart racing so fast. Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to help me hang up the phone when I'm done with this conversation because my reaction time is going to be spot on. And so just reframing that a little bit will help us. So stress, that's our everyday. That's our life. And looking at the last 2 years, we've lived life differently. And sometimes that was more stressful. Sometimes it was less. And as we're moving into doing things a little differently again, we've gotten used to the other new way. And now we have a new way. And any transition is going to be stressful.
Whoa, this is a major aha moment for me. We can remind ourselves that stress is a fact of life. It's not always in our control, but we can choose how we respond. Sometimes when we're in the heat of a stressful moment or period of time, we might have the tendency to start blaming. We blame that person, that thing, for creating the situation and for making us feel the way we feel. Frankly, blaming doesn't help. It just adds stress and keeps us focused on everything that is outside of our control.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
And let's even look at if we are, you know, doing our day to day and we are, maybe we're working, maybe we are in that sandwich generation, maybe we are, you know, let's just say the person we caregive for, who we love, let's say now there's an additional diagnosis and maybe you both got some news and it's not wonderful and it's going to make you have a whole lot of transitions again and change different things. You're going to have a lot of feelings about that. And I know in the Midwest, we're slightly allergic to feelings and we just want to forge forward. And that's frankly going to make our stress levels a little higher and our response to stress not quite as smart or wise or beneficial for us as it could be. The other thing to note is that person you're caregiving for and love who has a new diagnosis is probably going to be pretty stressed out too, and possibly does not have that capability that you might to say, ooh, yeah, here's what's going on, here's what I'm stressed about, and might have some different behaviors, some maybe unkind things to say to you, about something completely innocuous. You know, it might be my tag is scratchy and I'm going to take it completely out on you and yell at you all day long about this scratchy tag, and it's all your fault, and you, it's a conspiracy against me that you made. You put this scratchy tag in here, when it's probably about that diagnosis. So what is that whole picture, and how do we step back a few, maybe even a few hundred feet, and say, okay, what's really going on here? Because a lot of times it's not personal. But when you're caregiving, it feels it. So then we look at compassion fatigue. When we first enter something, we tend to be the zealot. We are going to be the best caregiver ever, and our loved one is going to be the best well-taken care of person in the world, and we're going to do all of these things, and we can hold that energy for so long, and it tends to fall off. Because when we throw ourselves into something 100%, the opposite is 0%, right? And honestly, I think we need to relook at that grading scale, because doing something 100% all the time means you're not resting. And then what happens is we have this compassion fatigue path, and we get to the irritability. We're like, oh, I don't want to have to do this. Why am I doing this? And why do you have to need this all the time? And what, you know, and it's one of those things, we just get irritable. I think of myself driving. That is where my irritability comes out. And I don't do mean things or road rage, but I say mean things. It might be to the red light. How dare you turn red? How could you do this to me today? And I'm like, oh, maybe I might be a little irritable here. What else is going on, right? And so that irritability, it happens to every single one of us. You know, every day. And we could get there 52 times a day. Or maybe it's once a week. We're all going to get there. We're going to be irritable, totally normal. And one of the great things we can do is say, oh, I'm irritable. What do I need right now? Do I need a break? Do I need some help? What do I need? So we might be zealot, go to irritable, go back to zealot right away. Or we might go to withdrawn. And we might go from zealot to withdrawn. And back to zealot to irritable. I mean, it truly, there's no absolute path. This is not a straight line whatsoever. Really think of compassion fatigue as that ping pong ball that is bouncing in the wind. It's that lower level part of our brain reacting to things that maybe we're getting triggered by. I mean, maybe there's something that's going on that bugs us on a good day. And once that happens, it's tough to regulate. It's tough to calm down. And in all honesty, if you want a 100% failure rate for anything, tell someone to calm down. Tell yourself to calm down. It's not going to work. It's not going to work ever. And I don't tend to speak in absolutes, but calm down never works. Mm-hmm. So thinking about yourself then as that caregiver, and if you say, I just have to calm down, you're probably going to make yourself a little mad. Think about if the person you're caregiving, you know, if they are not regulated and they are having a hard time, telling them to calm down is likely going to exacerbate whatever's going on. And then you are going to bounce around too and not quite know what to do. Your response to anything's not going to be as good. And yeah, you're going to probably get irritable. Or if we keep going on this compassion fatigue path, there's withdrawn, where you're like, that's it. Nothing I do is good enough. Nothing I do is going to help. I might as well just go sit over here and let you do whatever you want. And you withdraw. And that's it. Total hands-off approach. And then sometimes we get to zombie, where we think, I'm the only one that can do this. If not me, no one. I must do this. And we just go through our day and we wonder how we got to the end of it. Like when we're tired and we're driving and we end up at the store and we're like, how did I get here? What happens then as we're bouncing along this cycle and doing things and just trying to get the next thing done? We end up where we either get completely burnt out or we really need to figure out how can I grow some compassion resilience and do some different things and do things differently, not necessarily the opposite of what I was doing or not doing it, but how do I do things differently? Because burnout is when we're done. Burnout is when we just do not have the capacity anymore to do our job, our role, our caregiving. And we've seen this in the last couple of years in the healthcare profession, in the education profession. I mean, truly, when we look at parents and caregivers as well, we're seeing a lot of burnout. We're seeing a lot of coping skills that we probably wouldn't if we ourselves were doing better than we are.
Heather walked us through the realities of stress, compassion fatigue, and burnout. When she described the feeling of being like a ping pong ball bouncing in the wind, I could really relate. And zombie mode reminded me of that soldier mode which we talked about in our first episode. It's how we adapt and survive in the face of chronic stress, and caregivers can get stuck in this survival mode. We learned that burnout is similar to compassion fatigue, but it's like a total breakdown of our defenses and coping mechanisms. Caregivers are susceptible to burnout when we don't have adequate resources and support, or when we have unrealistic expectations for ourselves. And truthfully, the people we care for can also have those unrealistic expectations of us. So after all of this, I wonder, if stress is a fact of life and the demands of caregiving never cease to exist, what can we do to become more resilient? What can caregivers do to avoid getting completely burned out? Listen to what Heather tells us.
Well, first of all, I want to say feelings, they just happen. We just have emotions. Generally, they're pretty fleeting. And if you're one of those people who are like, okay, feelings are too squishy, I don't want to listen about feelings, look at feelings as data points for what you need. If you are overwhelmed, you probably need some help. If you are angry, something's not right and you probably need to fight for something. If you are sad and grieving, you probably miss something or someone, and it's okay to actually miss that. So feelings, frankly, are data points that help us figure out what is it that I need. The other thing with feelings is we judge them. We think happy and joyful and satisfied are positive, and that overwhelmed and irritable and sad are negative, and they're not. They all have a purpose, and they all point to those things that are working for us or not working for us. And so use those as your data points to figure you out. So being a Midwesterner, we have a long winter sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it snows and we go out and we shovel. And then it decides to snow another inch that night after we're all done shoveling. So we go back out and we shovel. And sometimes we have all week where it decides to give us a little snow here, a lot of snow there, and it just doesn't stop. And you still have to go out and shovel, right? I'm not saying stop shoveling. We need to shovel because we need to keep those sidewalks clear for folks who need to walk on the sidewalks. What I'm saying is it's okay to be mad that we have to keep going out and shoveling. It's okay to be tired. It's okay to be overwhelmed. It's okay to need a rest or ask for help.
Asking for help is hard. I mean really hard. When Heather mentions this, I thought back to the survey of Wisconsin caregivers I had mentioned earlier in this episode. I remembered reading that even when caregivers are reaching out for help, the conversation is focused on their loved ones, the recipients of caregiving. Most of the time, the caregivers aren't asking about help for themselves. I think this says something about how we see ourselves as caregivers and the importance that we ascribe to this role. So yes, asking for help for ourselves is hard, but it's the one thing we can do that might truly save us.
Yes, and it's not a failure. It's actually a big strength. And I know that we feel vulnerable and we don't like feeling vulnerable. It's going to help us for the long haul. I mean, caregiving truly, so cliche, is a marathon. And if we start by sprinting, we're going to get really tired by half a mile. I run marathons, I'm going to just tell you. I also want to just admit that I might be an educator, but I'm also someone who has to practice this a lot because I fall down and fail. And I need to get vulnerable and ask for help. And I'm overwhelmed sometimes. And truly, I don't know that there's one human being out there that has everything put together. Yeah. Not one of us. We might put that on social media that we have it all together. It's a lie. Mm-hmm. And just to let everyone know that, yeah, you're going to fail and you're going to make mistakes and you're going to think, what was I thinking? And that's all totally normal and human. And we do get to get up every day and say, okay, let's start again. With caregiving, we don't get the opportunity to make a plan or to look at what would I do if. We don't get to go through those what ifs because we're thrown into it like jumping into a volcano. And we just have to start figuring out what to do and how not to get burnt. So in doing that, it's hard to stop and say, who are the people who I trust, who I could vent to if I need to just get some things off my chest? Who are the people I trust to help me with my person who I love if I need help and I just need to run to the grocery store or even outside to scream for a while? Who are the people that I trust to be able to maybe laugh with? Because truly, I know caregiving, we're supposed to be loving, right? We're supposed to, we should on ourselves, right?
Yeah, that's what we say.
I should be loving. I should be patient. Yes. I should be compassionate. And you know what? It's going to fall apart and we're going to be mad as hell once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, I use humor a lot. And sometimes it sounds so inappropriate to people who don't get me. For me, it's that release. I need to say something cynical or sarcastic just to get it out there. It works for me, and I have those people that I trust to be able to say it to. And then honestly, what are my boundaries? What am I willing to give up? What am I willing to say yes to, particularly when we're in the middle of caregiving? Okay, here I am. Here's all the things I have to do. And how do I do them and get them done? That's going to be important. It's so hard, so hard. And frankly, the other thing is what works for you.
Yeah.
Truly. I mean, if today I said something, you're like, oh yeah, I like that. Try it out. Try it out for 21 days. If you're like, okay, I can see this, and you keep going for 60 days, you formed a new habit. If though I said something, you're like, oh, that's just nope, not gonna happen. Don't do it. Because in all honesty, we're all so different. And what works for me might not work for you. And you know what works for someone else, I'm like, wow, I never even thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that helps you rest and what helps you fill your soul? One thing that I heard recently on boundaries is that it's not requesting that you change your behavior. I can request that from you. If you are the person I'm caregiving, I can say, Jenna, you know, what I'd really like is 15 minutes right now so I can take a rest and you read your magazine or do whatever it is that I might have given you to do or something. That's only a request though. You may or may not do that. So if I said, I really need a rest right now, I really need 15 minutes, my boundary is, how much am I going to let you interrupt me? Where am I going to be in the house or in my yard or wherever we are so that you can get me or not get me? Would I maybe even say, hey, I'm calling my friend and saying, could you come on over for 30 minutes so I can take a walk? So my boundary is, what am I willing to do or not do?
Heather tells us that one way we can determine what our boundaries are and how or when to use them is by thinking about what we value. Personal values are the things that are important to us. Our values motivate us and guide us through life, and everybody's values are different. Heather explains how she uses her personal value of connection to set her boundaries.
What really helps is to sit back and say, okay, what works for me? What is my value in doing this? And sometimes we have to really sit down and think of what's my one value that would sum me up as a person, as a human, as a caregiver. And really looking at that and looking at what does that mean? You know, for me, I often use connection is my value. And for me, I want to connect to others. I want to connect them to the things they need. I want to connect people to each other. So for me, connection, though, is really being real and being authentic. What that looks like every day, though, is when I'm at work, what is it that I need to do to connect to the folks that I work with? Mm-hmm. What is it I need to do to connect people to real information that's going to be helpful for them? What am I going to do when I get home then and say, okay, now work's over here and now here's my family and I need to connect with them. I might put my phone away. I might turn my email off. I might not answer things so that I can connect with my family. That's going to look different with all of the people that I do connect with. So for me, every day connection looks like, okay, how do I focus on what needs to be focused on right now? How do I turn off what I need to turn off right now? That helps me decide what are my boundaries? What do I want to and need to say yes to fulfill my value? What do I need to and want to say no to make sure I have the boundaries so I can fulfill my yeses? Boundaries are one of the hardest things, especially when caregiving.
Boundaries are one of the hardest things when caregiving. But having them is also so important for our well-being. When we know what our limits are, we need to communicate them with confidence and try not to hold others accountable for maintaining our own boundaries, but instead take charge of our lives and give ourselves what we need. We need to be brave and say no sometimes, put ourselves first, and ask for help. We had a great conversation with Heather today. She and I talked so long that I have enough content to probably do a whole other episode, and I'm definitely inviting her back. Before we leave, there are a few things I want to highlight from today's conversation, like the importance of identifying people who can help, people we can trust, and people we can laugh with. Stress will never go away. Sometimes it's a good thing. We can be conscious of our responses to stress and use that to our advantage. All the feelings we experience when caregiving are normal, and we can use those feelings as data points to tell us what we need. We can experience feelings without judgment, but also notice the signs that things are getting out of hand and we're on the road to compassion fatigue or burnout. And above all, leave with this message today that asking for help is really a form of self-care. Or if we're turned off by the term self-care, then asking for help is a way to preserve and enhance your self-well-being. Thanks, caregivers, for tuning in today. And thanks to our guest, Heather Quackenboss from the UW Extension. Next month, we're having more conversations about respite, so be sure to tune back in. And until then, be brave, be informed, and remember, we need to take care of ourselves so that we can care better for others. This podcast was brought to you by the Aging and Disability Resource Center of La Crosse County, or ADRC. The ADRC is a one-stop shop for information related to caregiving, aging, or living with a disability. Assistance is free and confidential. Call 608-785-5700 or visit www.lacrossecounty.org/ADRC for more information. Music for this podcast was brought to you by Lemon Music Studio.